All right, hello everyone. I'm Bryce, and I am a sexaholic. This isn't about me. So I'm here to introduce our SA speaker. He's from Long Beach, and that's where his home group is. He first encountered SA in 1992 in Lakewood, and has been sober since 2022. I'd like to welcome David H.
Hi, I'm David H. And I have to admit, I feel very inadequate to be here as a speaker. I'm not an expert on anything. And I guess all I can do is share my experience, strength, and hope. And it really surprised me when I was asked to speak at this thing. As you heard, the first time I went to an SA meeting was in 1992. I don't want that to imply that I've been an expert in SA since 1992, because I just dabbled in the program at that time. And it certainly did not lead to sobriety, didn't lead to joy, happy, joyous freedom, or anything of that sort. When I first came into SA in 1992, it was not a happy, joyous day. Like most of you, you don't go to start a recovery program because you think, what a beautiful day out. This is a wonderful day. I think I'll start a recovery program. It wasn't that way with me. I was feeling the exact opposite of happy, joyous, and free. And I wasn't trying to be happy, joyous, and free either. I was just trying to survive. And I didn't know how to survive unless I did something different. And before I get into that, I have to disclose something, one of my weaknesses. I don't like to talk. And I don't mean I don't like public speaking, which I don't, but it's beyond that. I don't like to talk to anyone, anytime, anywhere, to anyone. When I was growing up, I had this really profound stutter. It took me a long time to get any sentence out. People were frustrated with me. I had no friends. They bullied me. They made fun of me. I got made fun of at home. Not at home, but at school. Definitely at church, at Boy Scouts. I was marginalized. I isolated myself because I couldn't talk to anybody. And because I couldn't talk to anybody, I stayed by myself and tried my best not to talk to anyone ever. And because of that, I really didn't know how to connect with other people. And when I became interested in women, I couldn't talk to a woman because I couldn't talk to anybody of any gender. But I discovered that there was a way that you could connect with a woman without not having to talk to them. And it started with me with the JCPenney catalog. I would sneak down in the middle of the night to look at the JCPenney catalog. And I discovered porn. I was in middle school, and we used to stop by a liquor store on the way home because they had an Asteroids machine. And I know this dates me. But behind us, there were all the magazines. And I wanted one so bad. But they wouldn't give one to me. So I stole it. I stole pornography from a house that was on my paper route. Also dates me, I guess. I tried to steal it again. I got caught. And he let me go with a warning. And I just needed that one. I just needed one magazine. Eventually, I found a place where I could buy them. I started buying magazines without them checking my age. And my mom found out. And she took me to my bishop, who had a talk with me. And I committed to repenting. And I thought it was all over. And for a while, it was. In fact, at that same time, I started developing my own spiritual relationship with God. that I lacked before. And I actually started preparing for a mission. I went on a mission for my church. I came back from my mission. I was now able to talk to women. So I found my wife, and luckily she talks a lot, so I didn't have to do a lot of talking myself. That is one of her great strengths, actually. And we got married. And this is not the joyous, happy, and free part. Because what happened when I got married is that we had problems. And I got to admit that the paramount problem there was that my wife was married to a person who didn't talk. And she was rightfully frustrated by it. And not only that, but she had problems and issues, very profound problems and issues, because you know what? She's human. And she was married to someone who didn't know how to connect with a human, because I never did it before I got married. And, you know, my wife blamed me for her problems. And I did too, because I didn't know the difference. I didn't know what normal was. I didn't realize that we didn't have a normal relationship, because I didn't know what a normal relationship looked like, because I never had a relationship with anybody before. And I was totally in left field. And what had happened is that I went to the thing that I went to previously in my life. I could have dealt with the problem so much better. I could have gone to counseling. I could have sought for help. I could have gone to my church, to my bishop. I didn't go to anybody. I didn't seek help from anybody. I couldn't admit that there was a problem. So I sought the solution that I had reached for when I was a teenager. I went back to pornography. And I only needed the one magazine, that's all. Just one magazine, nothing else. And you know what? That one magazine turned to multiple magazines. And before you knew it, I had a big giant stash in my house that I thought was so carefully hidden. No one would ever know. But you know what? My wife found it one day. And she knew. And I thought my life was over. And I thought everything was over. I thought we were going to get divorced. I thought everything was ended. But you know what? It didn't end. We went to counseling. We went to the bishop. We went to the people at church. It was in counseling in 1992 that the counselor said, hey, look, you've got a problem, you should go to SA. And I went to SA. And I went to SA not because I was convinced as a sexaholic. I mean, after all, I was a teenager. I stopped doing it. I stopped doing it for several years. And you know what? That was probably the worst thing for me, because I thought I could do that again. And so I went to SA to save my marriage. And that was it. I wasn't committed to the program. I was committed to my marriage, and that was all. And you know what? This isn't the joyous, happy, and freedom part either, going to SA. Because even though I dabbled in SA at that time, I still kept going back to the pornography. I would stop. I would be committed to stop. And I stopped for a month, 2 months, but I'd always go back to it. And, you know, it kept escalating. Not only was it pornography, it was masturbation. Not only was it those magazines, but it was harder magazines. Not only was it looking at pornography at home, but now looking at pornography at work. Looking at harder pornography at work, looking at videos, eventually even strip clubs. It kept escalating. And you know what else kept escalating? Were the consequences for my activities as well. My wife kept finding it. I don't know why I believed that I could hide it well enough that she would never find it in the house. After all, she lived there. I should have realized that. But she couldn't. I couldn't hide it well enough that she wouldn't find it eventually. And our first few years of marriage were living hell because we were arguing not only about her issues, which we were arguing about too, but also my pornography. And when I say arguing, remember, I'm the guy who doesn't talk, so it's mostly my wife arguing and me just looking down and saying, yes, I'm scum. That's what our arguments look like. And it wasn't healthy for me. It wasn't healthy for her. It wasn't healthy for my two kids who had to grow up in a family where we were always arguing with each other. There were other consequences at work. I eventually got found out at work. One of the secretaries saw me. She sued me and my boss. Of course, lost that job. And I actually ended up in court before a judge I knew and his court staff to testify about my pornography and masturbation in the office. It wasn't enough to make me stop. That didn't stop me. I kept going. And eventually, I just bought a magazine. I had it on the seat, passenger seat of the car. And I was driving along, and I thought, oh, I'm just going to look at it, glance at it. And as I did, I hit the tree. The airbag went off. The airbag shattered my wrist, and I have this scar here. And every time I see this scar, I'm reminded that this is because I'm a sexaholic. That wasn't enough to make me stop. What eventually happened was that my wife was going to leave me again. And she was really going to leave me. She had told me to get out of the house and start looking for an apartment. And I came into the program, and I decided to take it seriously. And thinking back for that 13-year period between 1992 and 2005, I had done so many things to try to stop on my own. Like I said, I went to SA. I went to some meetings. They didn't do any good. Of course, I didn't take them seriously. I even had sponsors, two sponsors. I remember meeting one of my former sponsors at a Unity conference, and he didn't remember me. And I was thankful for that. Yeah, I didn't do much with the sponsors. I read scriptures. I prayed. I remember talking to my bishop, and my bishop had me in his office. He asked me, when did you stop reading scriptures and praying? And I could just see him writing the sacrament meeting talk in his mind that, you know, you stop praying and reading scriptures, and this is what happens to you. And I'm like, I didn't stop praying. I didn't stop reading scriptures. I'm still doing those things. And it blew his mind. He couldn't understand that. I went to counseling. I went to counseling with my wife. And you know what? It didn't work either. It didn't stop me. And the reason none of those things stopped me was, number one, I wasn't honest. I wasn't honest with my sponsors. I wasn't honest in SA. Well, actually, I can't say I wasn't honest in SA meetings because I didn't talk. I wasn't honest with my wife, that's for sure. I wasn't honest with the counselors. I wasn't honest with my bishop. I wasn't honest with anybody. And the other thing is that I want to go back to those days before my marriage. And because thinking back to that time, I had stopped. I had stopped looking at pornography, but I didn't stop lusting. Even when I was a missionary, I would go down the streets of Spain, and at every corner there was a magazine kiosk, and I would see the magazines, and I would lust after them. You know what I did preparing for my mission? I would take my books, my spiritual books, I'd go down to the beach to read them, and it wasn't because of the Zen meditation of the waves and the sand. I wanted to go back to those days when I was lusting and not acting out. But you know what? I couldn't do it. As long, you know, as much as I wanted to stop acting out, as much as I wanted to stop looking at pornography, I couldn't do it if my goal was only to stop looking at pornography. Now, my goal wasn't to stop masturbating because no one ever caught me doing that. But, you know, I had heard of surrender. I knew about surrender. I said, okay, when I'm in the liquor store parking lot, this is before the internet, I will surrender then. But when I was in the liquor store parking lot, I did not surrender. I couldn't at that point. Now, the difference between 1992 and 2005, when I started to take the program seriously, was that I was so desperate, I didn't know what to do. It wasn't like I was willing to now surrender to God. I just didn't know what to do. But I knew that there was a guy there who did. And that was the guy who became my sponsor, Dan. I love Dan. He made the biggest difference in my life. For once, I was honest with somebody. I was honest with Dan. And I didn't know what to do, but I committed that I would do whatever Dan told me to do. And you know what Dan told me to do? He told me to call him every day. I needed to talk to people. I needed to talk to Dan. I didn't know what to do, or I don't know how to talk to people on the phone. I remember as a missionary, I would avoid calling our investigators because I didn't know how to talk to them on the phone. And then he made me talk to more people. He said, you got to talk to other people on the phone. I had to talk to more. And he's like, well, you can't just sit in the meetings. You have to participate in the meetings. You have to talk. And no. I began participating in meetings because he told me to. And then he told me, you know what? After the meetings, you just leave. You can't do that. You need to talk to people after the meetings. And that's even worse. And then he's like, you know what? Your life is a mess. You need to talk to a counselor and be honest with them. It's like, no, I got to talk to another person? And then it's like, well, you need to serve. You need to serve in the meetings. We need a new person coordinator. So I want you to be here at the meetings half hour early. You're going to volunteer to be the new person coordinator. So I was a new person coordinator for like 10 years in Lakewood. And I talked to every new person who came into that meeting. And it wasn't the talking necessarily that made me sober. It was the willingness to follow direction. And with that, and that willingness only came because I was honest for the first time in my life. The honesty made the willingness necessary, and the willingness made the sobriety necessary. My sponsor taught me about surrender. And I said, well, yeah, I surrender. Don't worry, I'll surrender if I'm ever confronted with a magazine. He said, no. I want you to talk to me when you even think about a magazine. And instead of surrendering the acting out, I was surrendering lust. And it was because I was following direction from a sponsor. I still remember the first time I made a phone call to my sponsor. I can't say it was right away after he became my sponsor. It was actually a couple days later. My car broke down on the freeway coming back home. And I pull off the freeway, and I'm starting to call AAA. I'm looking over, and there's a strip club I'd been to. I go, okay. My sponsor, I know what he'd want me to do. I'll give him a call. I gave him a call. And we talked until the AAA guys came. And then the AAA guys took me to a shop. They dropped me off at a shop in this little strip mall. And guess what's in the strip mall? an adult bookstore. And I go, okay, I guess I know what to do. What my sponsor would want me to do, I gave him a call, and he said, don't call me, call other people. So he gave me some phone calls, phone numbers, because he gave me a phone list, but I don't know what happened to it. I'd had it for 2 days, and it was already gone. So I made those phone calls. And the whole time I'm waiting there with my car, I'm worried because I had to call my wife to pick me up, my wife who didn't like me at that time. And I wasn't even sure she was going to even want to pick me up. And I was worried that we'd have to spend an hour, hour and a half in the car together, quietly being stolen at each other while we were driving home. But despite all those worries, despite the fact that I had a trigger right over there, I didn't lust. And by the time I got home, I realized that I had experienced a miracle. It was the first miracle I'd experienced in SA. A miracle that God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And that is the essence of the program. And the promises, it says that we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. I was amazed on day one when I followed my sponsor's directions. And I've been amazed every day. Because every day that I surrender, that I have a thought that comes into my mind, or I see something on the side of the freeway, or I see that person, and I give up that thought, that right I think that I have to look at that person or look at that thing, God takes from me the lust, and I experience the miracle again. And I wish God would just take it from me and just not have to worry about it ever again. I wish I'd received that type of miracle, but that's not the miracle God gives me. And I'm grateful. I can say now, I wasn't then, but I can say now, I'm grateful he didn't. Because I get to experience a miracle every day. And you know what? When I need it most, and I have to surrender, not every day, but every hour, or every half hour, every 5 minutes, he gives me the miracle again. And I get that miracle repeatedly, over and over again, when I need it the most. And the promises were, it says that we will experience a new freedom and new happiness. I can say I've experienced that. After 13 years in the program, I was 13 years sober. And you know what? I didn't get divorced. My wife and I, we became closer together. We had problems. We had issues even after I was in the program, even after I was following the directions of my sponsor. But because I didn't have, you know, the sexaholism hanging over me. I wasn't resorting to a lust to solve my problems. I was able to solve my problems through real means. And things got better between my wife and I. I was on the point of excommunication from my church in 1992 and several times between 1992 and 2005. And especially in 2005, eventually I got to the point where they put me in church leadership. And I don't think I deserve that at all. But you know what? I'm going to read from the big book. Right after the promises, there's this ominous paragraph here that I'm going to read. And it says, it is easy to lit up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol or lust, in my case, is a subtle foe. We are not cured of lust. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And that was certainly true for me, because after 13 years of sobriety, I decided that I've got this. I don't need this. I don't need this program because I can do it on my own. It's not that I really made the decision that SA wasn't a good thing or I'm really beyond it. It's just that I decided I was too busy. Most of you guys in the program, look at you. You're all retired. You have all the time in the world. I'm not like that. I have things to do. I've got very important things to do, and I don't have time to fit in the program. And I still feel that times that way all the time. And my life would be so much easier if I didn't have to do all this stuff, like calling people all the time, starting the day with a daily inventory, meditating, prayer. That takes time. I could be doing other things during that time. And you know what? I couldn't make it on my own. I couldn't do it. And I ended up going back out there. I saw an idea that the problem is that I hadn't experienced every single form of lust. And when another one came up that looked attractive to me, I glommed onto it. And I went back out there. And, you know, it was only when I got caught again and came back into the program and got a new sponsor and followed his direction and worked the steps with him that I found true recovery. And I got back that new freedom and that new happiness. Now, I don't think my sponsor is God. Sorry. But I trust that when I call my sponsor, that he's going to tell me the things that God would want me to hear. And before I call my sponsor, I always say a prayer that he'll give me God's words. And because I'm able to trust in my sponsor, because I'm able to trust in the program, I'm able to follow something. They say that SA is a simple program, easy does it. And they also say that it's a simple program that's repeated. If you stop repeating it, it doesn't work. And the steps, sponsor, 10-step inventory, actually talking to people, those things made it possible so that I could have that new freedom and that new happiness promised in the SA program, or promised in the promises in the big book. I don't regret the past. I don't want to shut the door on it, because, you know, all those things that I experienced in the past made it possible for me to be the type of person that is constantly praying to God. I'd always heard at church that you have to pray constantly and do not faint. I didn't know what that was. You know, I said a morning prayer. Okay. But in SA, we're praying all the time. We're keeping up constant contact with God because every thing that comes up, we pray to God about. I didn't do that before, but I do that now. And I'm glad I live this way now. And that type of life would not be necessary unless I had the past that I did. And because I have the past that I did, I'm able to share that my experiences with other people. And, you know, they can take whatever benefit they can from it. The theme of this conference is happy, joyous, and free. SA has led me to happiness. It's led me to joy. It's led me to a new freedom. The promises in the big book are real, and they do come to pass. But I know that it's contingent. It is contingent, meaning that it can stop at any time if I don't do what I'm supposed to do. It's contingent on surrender. Is there a contingent on daily work and maintaining that constant contact with God? I say things. Amen.